Welcome to today's edition of the Bible Class. Our teacher, Dr. Kenneth C. Hill, is teaching from the Old Testament book of Hosea. You may send your questions by email through our website at whcbradio.org. That's whcbradio.org. Or by the Postal Service, write the Bible Class, care of WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Lovell, Tennessee 37617. And now, here is Dr. Hill with today's lesson.
Welcome to the Bible Class. We're continuing with our study in the Minor Prophet book of Hosea. We're in chapter 4, and we're having an exposition or a conversation about chapter 4 and some of the verses before we get into chapter 5 in this session. In verse 6 of Hosea chapter 4, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me. Seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I will also forget thy children. No longer is the nation to be in the priestly position before God." Exodus 19:6 put them in that position. However, the nation has been rejected. In verse 8, "They eat up the sin of my people. They do set their heart on their iniquity." It may refer to the sin offering. The same Hebrew word is used in sin offering as it is the sin, indicating the priests grew wealthy by seizing the offerings that the people brought. And instead of using it in the proper way, they used it to make gain. In verse 12, the word wooden stocks, or stocks, the people counsel at their stocks, those were considered to be sacrifice idols. They would be some sort of a carved image. It might be a wooden image. When it talks about their stocks, it's not stocks and bonds, nor is it stocks as in some sort of a device used in discipline or in a legal way. These are the wooden carvings that they used as an idol worship. And so they would consult their idols, is basically what it would be. And their staff declareth unto them, another piece of wood would declare to them. And it was just nothing but idol worship. In verse 13, "Sacrifices to the heathen gods were offered on the tops of the mountains, and they were accompanied by various sex acts that took place in what they would call a ritual sex. We call it adultery, we call it whoredom, we call it all sorts of wickedness, and that's what it was. But they did that to appease their fleshly lusts and desires. We notice, "I will not punish your daughters," and it speaks then further and says, when they commit whoredom, "nor your spouses when they commit adultery." The word spouses there is better translated daughter-in-law. So I won't punish your daughters nor your daughters-in-law because you've taught them to sin, is the way that it reads. And verse 15, "Though thou, Israel, play the harlot, yet let not Judah offend, and come not ye unto Gilgal, neither go ye up to Beth Avon, nor swear," period, comma, I should say, "nor swear," comma, and then the statement, "the Lord liveth." The people were told not to worship at what they were formerly having as holy sites. Gilgal and Beth Avon, Beth Avon means house of wickedness, and it was Hosea's name for Bethel, which means house of God. And they were told they were not to worship there. So Beth Avon did not, exist by name. It existed in reality because that was the name that Hosea gave for Bethel. Bethel was the house of God, and yet it had been turned into a house of evil or a house of wickedness, and that's what Hosea was trying to portray by calling it Beth-Aven. And then verse 16, "For Israel slideth back as black backsliding heifer, and now the Lord will feed them as a lamb in a large place." Israel is as stubborn like a stubborn heifer. It's a backsliding heifer, if you will. It's one that refuses to go forward when you're trying to get them to go forward. It's one that needs the various goads to force it to go forward. Also, let's see, in verse 17, "Ephraim is joined to idols, let him alone." Judah was warned to stay away from the northern kingdom. Judah was warned to stay away from Israel, stay away from Ephraim, stay away from the northern kingdom. Verse 19, "The wind hath bound up, bound her up in her wings. They shall not be ashamed because of their sacrifices." The wind of judgment from God Almighty will come suddenly and violently, and you need to be prepared, is the meaning there. Let's go to chapter 5. "Hear ye this, O priests, and hearken, ye house of Israel, and give ye ear, O house of the king. For judgment is toward you, because you have been a snare on Mizpah, and a net spread upon Tabor. The priests and kings were condemned for snaring the people with idolatrous practices." Mizpah is on the east of Jordan, by the way. Tabor is on the west of Jordan, and God is chastising the priests for their idolatry on both the east and the west bank of the Jordan River. "And the revolters are profound to make slaughter, though I have been a rebuker of them all. I know Ephraim, and Israel is not hid from me. For now, O Ephraim, thou committest whoredom, and Israel is defiled. They will not frame their doings to turn unto their God, for the spirit of whoredoms is in the midst of them, and they have not known the Lord. And the pride of Israel doth testify to his face. Therefore shall Israel and Ephraim fall in their iniquity. Judah also shall fall with them. They shall go with their flocks and with their herds to seek the Lord, but they shall not find him. He hath withdrawn himself from them. They have dealt treacherously against the Lord, for they have begotten strange children. Now shall a month devour them with their portions." In that verse 7, it talks about the month. "Shall a month devour them with their portions." It's a new moon. We'd see a destruction of their land, is what Hosea is saying. He's letting them know that destruction is coming and coming soon. Verse 8, "Blow ye the cornet in Gibeah, and the trumpet in Ramah. Cry aloud at Beth-Aven," and that would be Bethel, "after thee, O Benjamin." This is a shofar, so blow the shofar. The shofar is a ram's horn, so blow the horn. Gibeah and Ramah were high mountains in central Palestine, excellent places for the sounding of an alarm. And he's saying, sound the alarm. We need the alarm to be sounded. Verse 9, "Ephraim shall be desolate in the day of rebuke among the tribes of Israel. Have I made known that which shall surely be?" The day of God's judgment against the people of the northern kingdom is seen as the day of rebuke. And indeed it would be. "The princes of Judah were like them that remove the bound. Therefore I will pour out my wrath upon them like water." They move the boundary. Now, to move the boundary, according to Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 14, and chapter 27, verse 17, that was against the law. It was a crime. It wasn't just a sin, it was a crime to move the boundary. You never move the boundary. People have a right to know where property lines are, and you never take the boundary and remove it. He says, the princes of Judah were like them that removed the boundary. Therefore, I will pour out my wrath upon them like water. Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked after the commandment. Now, this is a commandment of Jeroboam, is the reference. Jeroboam led Israel into sin, according to 1 Kings chapter 12, 28, according to other contemporaries of Hosea as well. And so this commandment of Jeroboam was not to be obeyed, but was to be ignored, and yet they obeyed Jeroboam. Verse 13, when Ephraim, well, let's go to verse 12, therefore will I be unto Ephraim as a moth, and to the house of Judah as rottenness. When Ephraim saw his sickness, and Judah saw his wound, then went Ephraim to the Assyrian and sent to King Jareb. Yet could he not heal you, nor cure you of your wound. For I will be unto Ephraim as a lion, and as a young lion to the house of Judah, I, even I, will tear and go away. I will take away, and none shall rescue him. I will go and return to my place till they acknowledge their offense and seek my face. In their affliction they will seek me early. Here he says that King Jareb is going to be consulted to try to heal the wound of Ephraim. It's not going to happen. It was probably Tiglath-Pileser III that he's talking about. Israel sought help from the Assyrians, as you may remember in your history, and yet the Assyrians did not help them. They sought it, but it was not given to them, and that's what God is saying through Hosea here. You can seek all the help you want, but you're not going to find it. And now into Hosea chapter 6, come and let us return unto the Lord, for he hath torn, and he will heal us. He hath smitten, and he will bind us up. Now we're starting to see the hope that comes in the Lord. After 2 days will he revive us. In the third day he will raise us up, and we shall live in his sight. After 2 days and in the third day, it's a short period of time. We see that in Luke chapter 13, verses 32 and 33, and 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. We also see it as a day being as 1,000 years, and if you wish to use that from Peter, then you see after 2,000 years, he will revive us, and in the third day, in the 3,000th year, he will raise us up, and we shall live in his sight. Some prophetic students tell us that after 2,000 years from the time of the destruction of the temple, it was approximately 2,000 years that then the children of Israel were allowed to return in the wave of 1948 with the establishment of the Jewish state of Israel. And then they're looking for the millennial kingdom to be completed somewhere in the 3,000th year so that they will be living in his sight. They will then be indeed the wife, that is, the Jews will be the wife of Yahweh or Jehovah. Verse 3, then shall we know, if we follow on to know the Lord, his going forth is prepared as the morning. He shall come unto us as the rain, as the latter and former rain, unto the earth, or unto the earth is a better way to put it. And that's the way it is here in the King James. As certain as the dawn, the restoration of Israel will occur at the second coming of Christ. We know it's just as the dawn coming. Romans 11, 26 would be a verse for you to go and take a look at. In verse 4, O Ephraim, what shall I do unto thee? O Judah, what shall I do unto thee? For your goodness is as a morning cloud, and as the early dew it goeth away. Self-reformation, self-righteousness, the idea that we can turn over a new leaf, it's deceptive like the morning cloud. Morning cloud, the morning fog comes in like you're going to have rain, like you're going to have a cool day, and then it's dissipated and you are not pleased with what happens. So that is the self-reformation efforts of Israel. They just fail. Verse 5, therefore have I hewed them by the prophets. I have slain them by the words of my mouth, and thy judgments are as the light that goeth forth. For I desired mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. But they, like men, have transgressed the covenant. There have they dealt treacherously against me. Gilead is a city of them that work iniquity and is polluted with blood. And as troops of robbers wait for a man, so the company of priests murder in the way by consent, for they commit lewdness. I have seen a horrible thing in the house of Israel. There is the whoredom of Ephraim. Israel is defiled. Also, O Judah, he hath set an harvest for thee when I returned the captivity of my people. Israel's attempts have been many to reform themselves, but it's going to take judgment. Here, this loving kindness, this hesed, is mentioned once again in Hosea 6:6. This word mercy there is the same as loving kindness. And we know that God's loving kindness never fails, even in judgment. Now in verse 7, but they, like men, have transgressed the covenant. They've dealt treacherously against me, is the Lord's message. It may refer to men in general transgressing God's commandment, or it could mention Adam specifically here as Adam's original sin and his original transgress. According to commentators, they take it either way. In verse 9, and as troops of robbers wait for a man, so the company of priests murder in the way by consent, for they commit lewdness. They're on the way to Shechem. That's on the road to Bethel. And they were on their way to idol worship. They were going to commit lewdness. And so we see in this short chapter of chapter 6 that Hosea gives us great insight into the millennial kingdom and what will happen. But he also reminds us that there is judgment prior to the blessings. Much judgment yet to come. Hosea chapter 7. When I would have healed Israel, and the iniquity of Ephraim was discovered, and the wickedness of Samaria, for they commit falsehood, and the thief cometh in, and the troop of robbers spoileth without, and they consider not in their hearts that I remember all their wickedness. Now their own doings have beset them about, and they are before my face. They make the king glad with their wickedness, and the princes with their lies. They are all adulterers, as an oven heated by the baker, who ceaseth from raising after he hath kneaded the dough until it be leavened. In the day of our king, the princes have made him sick with bottles of wine. He stretched out his hand with scorners. Samaria was the capital of Ephraim, or Israel, and the word Ephraim is used interchangeably with Israel, or the northern kingdom. And so we see that Samaria being the capital, then it receives the judgment. Also, we see that Hosea describes a particularly despicable time of revelry It might be a royal birthday. It might be a coronation or something like that. But the lusts of the leaders is seen as burning like an oven. They're glad with their wickedness. The kings are. And the princes are glad. They're happy with their lies. They're all adulterers. As a hot oven, it said. And in the day, the princes have made him sick with bottles of wine, and he was there counted among scorners in reality because of the revelry, because of the despicable nature of their sin.
Thank you for joining us today for this edition of the Bible Class with Dr. Kenneth C. Hill. You may reach us by email by going to our website, whcbradio.org, and sending us an email on the Contact Us link. That's whcbradio.org. If you prefer to use the Postal Service, our address is The Bible Class, WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Bluffville, Tennessee, 37617. That's The Bible Class, care of WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Bluffville, Tennessee, 37617. You may also call us at 423-878-6279. Until our next Bible Class program, we are trusting that the Lord will richly bless you as you serve Him.